the really important part of the barrier system of the gut lining is this segment called the mucosa. Now, the mucosa and the mucus or the mucin are two separate things, right? We often talk about it as one, just it makes it easier to understand it that way. But given that you guys are in a class learning things in the most frank way possible, I want to give you the most specific definitions, right? So the mucosa, and I'll have a diagram of this in the next slide, is the entire barrier system of the gut, right? So it's actually the mucus layer, and then the epithelial cells, the basolateral, which is called the lamina propria, and then there's a muscularis as well, which is the smooth muscle cells that control contractile movement and peristalsis and so on, right? So that entire structure is actually referred to typically as the mucosa. What we're usually referring to, where the microbes live and things start to penetrate through, is the mucin or the mucus layer of the gut lining, right? So keep that in mind. But so we'll use the terminology somewhat interchangeably, but I'll try to be specific so you guys are very aware of what we're actually talking about. But the mucosa is really the defense mechanism, and it's a very dynamic system, as we talked about. And the very front layer of the mucosa is this mucus barrier, right? So there's this mucin mucus barrier that acts as a defense mechanism. It is around 4,000 square feet, so about 400 square meters in the gut. So it's a huge surface area. A lot of that surface area comes from how the small bowel's physiology is set up. You'll see that in the next slide. But it's a massive surface area, right? Imagine in your digestive tract, right, in this small area here in your midsection, you've got almost 4,000 square feet of surface area. The other thing about that surface area is there's a lot of space for things to go wrong, right? So imagine if your mucus barrier, your mucosa starts to get dismantled in this given region that's all folded up here, even if a tenth of it becomes dysfunctional, right? You've got 400 square feet of the 4,000 that becomes dysfunctional. It can really have a huge impact. And then that becomes a perpetual problem. So you've got an entire tennis court or professional basketball court folded up in here. Every single square inch of that area has to have the proper structure and the proper functionality. And it's not very hard for that to start to get dismantled. So it's got that mucin layer that I talked about at the very top. So you've got the epithelium, and I promise you I'll show you a diagram next because it's easier to see it and understand it when you can visualize. But you've got the epithelial, which are the barrier cells of your intestines. Sitting on top of the epithelium is this layer of mucin, right? That's the mucus part of it. The mucus part of it is not just non-specific mucus. It's a very complicated and very specific structure. I'll give you a little bit of a understanding of the architecture of the mucus itself when we get to the next slide, because there's a difference between the large and the small intestine mucus for very, very deliberate and important reasons. But it's the mucus layer is a really important area to slow down the progression of things that are moving through the lining of the gut, through the entire mucosa. And it also provides a stopgap to stop things from directly interacting with your intestinal epithelial cells or the immune cells in the intestinal epithelium, right? So remember, the epithelium is referring to the lining of cells, the intestinal cells that line the barrier. And within that lining of the epithelial cells is a number of different categories of cells. You've got epithelial cells, which are just barrier cells. So just think of them as soldiers blocking the way, standing shoulder to shoulder. But every few cells, you've got immune cells. So you've got L cells, M cells, Paneth cells. These immune cells are incredibly important because this is the largest area of sampling and immune development in your body. So you've got lots of immune cells throughout that line of barrier cells that are constantly sampling and having conversations with your microbiome and trying to understand the foods and the antigens and the toxins and all that are coming into the system. So it prepares your system to deal with all of that, right? So you've got immune cells, you've got barrier cells, and then you've got neuroendocrine cells. So these are neurological cells that have both neurological and endocrine function, right? So they can create neurotransmitters, they can create hormones, they can create lots of different things to get your body to be able to respond to what's coming in. Remember, your digestive tract is the largest exposure of things trying to enter into your body, right? So you're eating, you're drinking, and you're breathing things in, you're getting exposed to all the air. All of that stuff is going into your digestive tract one way or the other. And as a result of that, you have to have this really important these really important classes of cells that help your body understand what's coming through and then help your body respond to your environment, right? That gives us our adaptability. So this is we talked about the immune system in the gut, and that's the most robust part of your immune system. And there's a number of players in that mucus or mucosal immune system. Number one of the most prominent players as part of the immune defense system is secretory IgA, right? Secretory IgA, you find it in other secretory fluids as well, like in your teardrops, in your saliva. But it's very abundant in your mucus layer, in that mucin layer, right? It's secreted by your intestinal epithelial cells, your barrier cells, and the immune cells within the barrier into that mucosal layer. And it acts as a very, very important part of the defense system. It does a number of things. Number one, it is the way it designs your the way your body designs this IgA, this antibody, is it has a lot of affinity for a lot of different types of molecules. If you recall, immunoglobulins or antibodies are very specific to specific antigens, right? So you remember, if you have IgG, for example, you have B cells in your immune system that are producing IgG antibodies. That's your long-term immunoprotective antibodies to say a flu virus that you got exposed to 10 years ago. You still have that B cell in your immune system ready to produce that one antibody in case you encounter that flu cell again. That's what gives us kind of immune protection. That's adaptive immunity, right? That allows us to get sick from something. Our body learns what that thing is. It produces protection against that thing through IgG antibodies that is very specific for that one thing. And then that cell that makes those antibodies are always sitting and waiting until you see that one thing again. When you encounter that one thing again, that cell goes into action through a complex immune cascade, and then it produces a bunch of that antibody, but that antibody is highly specific to that one antigen, right? If you got influenza H1N1 exposure 4 or 5 years ago, you've got H1N1 antibodies in your system waiting for the next time you encounter it, but those antibodies don't bind anything else. They're very, very specific for the H1N1 based on structural elements of that virus. IgA is designed differently. IgA has a multiplicity of capability of binding things. Those antibodies can bind mold toxins, they can bind bacterial components, they can bind viral components, and there's a significant amount of intelligence that goes into how your body designs the IgA antibody. So it has this real broad facet in binding lots of things that could be dangerous. It also binds lots of things that are benign. So it binds a lot of food particles. It binds a lot of commensal bacteria so that it teaches your immune system not to have to attack those things when your immune system sees it. When your immune system sees something that's bound by secretory IgA, it refrains from attacking it, right? That's part of how you end up getting tolerance, because you don't want your immune system targeting your own commensal bacteria. You don't want your immune system targeting food particles and things that you should be tolerant. And also, if IgA has neutralized something that's potentially dangerous, like a toxin or like a potentially pathogenic bacteria or virus, you don't need your immune system upregulating, creating inflammation. It's already neutralized, right? So if something has been bound by IgA in the mucus layer, in your saliva, in your tears, in your secretory fluids, it doesn't elicit an immune response. And that's exactly what you want. But in order for that to work properly, you need a lot of IgA and you need very diverse IgA structures so it can bind lots of different things. The diversity and the expression of IgA is dependent on the microbiome, right? So the microbiome activates certain immune cells through crosstalk from that mucus layer, it activates immune cells to start to express something called pattern recognition receptors. Pattern recognition receptors can read patterns on lots of different things, on different viruses, different bacteria, including our commensal bacteria, food particles, different types of antigens. And as a result of reading all those different structural patterns, it produces a huge variety of IgA. And then it secretes that IgA into the mucosa. So that is a service that the microbiome is providing to the immune cells, saying, hey, I'm going to show you all these patterns. I'm going to help you upregulate your pattern recognition. And then I'm going to stimulate you to produce more IgA so that all the things that are coming into the system that can be neutralized by IgA won't elicit an immunological response, right? That's a very important part of our system. That is called oral tolerance. The first step in losing oral tolerance and developing things like sensitivities to foods, vulnerabilities to infection in the gut, vulnerabilities to a shifting microbiome like the development of SIBO and so on, is this lack of IgA diversity and lack of IgA concentration. Because if IgA is not neutralizing something that's present in the mucosa, it's going to elicit an immune response. And always remember that the first line of defense in your immune response is an inflammatory response. That's the innate immune system, right? So if you don't have adequate IgA in your mucin layer that's neutralizing things, those things are going to elicit an immune response. The immune response is going to be an inflammatory immune response. That inflammatory immune response can damage the cells and the air and the structural elements around it, and you start to lose tolerance, right? So that's in a very important cycle, and it's really important to understand what IgA does, right? It's not only protecting us by neutralizing potentially harmful things, but it's also preventing your immune system from reacting to things it shouldn't be reacting. So keep that in mind. Now, here's the other thing. When your body doesn't have adequate levels of IgA, if you're not getting stimulus from a healthy, diverse microbiome to produce enough IgA, your body understands that you need some sort of immunoglobulin in your secretory fluids because that's an important first line of defense. So as a result of not getting enough stimulus to produce IgA, your body upregulates cells called eosinophils and basophils to produce IgE. Right? So that's a different kind of antibody. The problem with IgE is when it binds something, it actually activates hypersensitivity cells like eosinophils and basophils that then release things like histamine and leukotrienes that cause an allergic-like response. So your body's backup for not having enough IgA is to upregulate IgE, but IgE doesn't solve the problem at all because not only does it not bind as many things as IgA can, but when it does bind something, including a food particle that's kind of that is just benign, it doesn't need to be afraid of it, but when it binds that food particle, it upregulates a histamine leukotriene response and can even activate mast cells and so on. Right. So just having dysfunctional IgA alone, not having enough, not having diverse IgA, can create a mass amount of immunological issues that spiral out of control into food intolerances, allergies, asthma, low diversity that then leads to leakiness in the gut because of the constant inflammatory damage in the lining of the gut or the inflammatory attack in the lining of the gut, hormone imbalances, metabolic syndrome, everything can cascade from there, right? So it's really, really important to note that IgA is really important to have an adequate amount. Defensins, these are antimicrobial peptides that are released by the intestinal epithelial cells and the immune cells within the mucosa. And these are again stimulated by the microbiome and stimulated in the small intestine by bile, by the presence of bile. And so your intestinal epithelial cells and all that are constantly secreting antimicrobials into that mucus layer to keep the microbe growth in under control and to potentially ward off any pathogens from establishing itself. The intestinal alkaline phosphatase, which is an enzyme in that not the mucosal layer, but the mucosal layer that detoxifies harmful substances like LPS and maintains a healthy microbiome and tight junctions and all that. So think of it as like a detoxification, buffering, neutralizing agent that's really, really important. Again, released by the intestinal epithelial cells, more often than not, in response to the presence of a diverse microbiome that stimulates the release of this. And then the GALT, the gut-associated lymphoid tissue, is part of that mucosal immune system as well. It contains upwards of 70% of the body's immune cells. So think about immune cells throughout your entire body. 70 plus percent are in this gut-associated lymphoid tissue, and this is where a lot of the sampling is constantly being done. Your immune cells, in a cooperation with the microbiome, are sampling things that are coming through, and then with the right context of the microbiome, is producing IgA against many of those things, or developing a form of tolerance against many of those things by being regulated by something called regulatory T cells, right? Regulatory T cells are the second way of defending against unwanted immune responses. The first way is having high diversity and volume of IgA. The second thing is the presence of regulatory T cells. These are T cells that are monitoring all the immunological responses in the body. And when it sees an immunological response that shouldn't be happening, it can stop and dampen that response. It can reduce, for example, your immune system attacking, ragweed or pollen or a protein from food. It can stop that, or your own cells. So it can stop autoimmune responses as well. And then it can teach those immune cells that you don't have to respond to that next time, right? That is another part of immune tolerance and adaptability. The thing is, the upregulation of the T regulatory cells are also dependent on the presence of a diverse microbiome, right? So IgA and the T regulatory cells need a diverse, healthy microbiome in order to be expressed and function properly. This is why when you don't have a diverse microbiome and you have higher loads of pathogens and lower loads of keystone species, you start to see these immunological issues start to creep up, right? And we're seeing that, of course, now at an earlier and earlier age when you think about things like allergies and asthma, which are epidemics in childhood right now. And then even, adults who are tolerant of certain foods and things earlier in life now become intolerant of those foods, and later on in life, that's a clear example of the loss of tolerance, which means one of those two, if not both, of those immune system functions are not functioning in the right way. If you used to be able to handle this kind of food, like, let's say you used to be able to handle nightshades, and then all of a sudden now nightshades are very inflammatory and cause problems for you. That means that there's a loss of oral tolerance. It's a immunological dysfunction that stems from a change in the microbiome. It's not about the food. It's not that nightshades are bad. It's not that lectins are bad. It's not that, these other components of fiber is bad, either soluble or insoluble fiber. Proteins are bad, right? It's not about meat being bad, saturated fat being bad. It's your system is not tolerating it properly because it's lost some of these functional mechanisms, right? And that's where I see a lot of things with diet. And diet is a difficult one because people get very activists about their diet positions and so on. But at the end of the day, outside of processed and ultra-processed foods, and we'll talk about some of those things, real foods that we're talking about, there's very few that are genuinely bad for you, right? And those foods often that keep people get a bad response from, it's as a result of their system being dysfunctional, not the food itself being kind of a negative thing. This is where dendritic cells, mast cells, and all that come into play as well. When you have a dysfunctional immune response, you can get an overexpression of mast cells, dendritic cells in your mucosa. But generally, mast cells and dendritic cells are supposed to be there because they're monitoring the barrier and they're trying to look for things that are coming through that shouldn't be coming through, and then they will attack them when they do. This is supposed to be happening in a very light level in this 4,000 square feet of surface area. You're supposed to have dendritic cells and mast cells kind of monitoring, and sometimes things may leak through because an epithelial cell, one of those barrier cells, may get damaged for some reason and then get kicked out. So there might be a temporary gap there. So some things might leak through. Dendritic cells, mast cells go there and stop the potential toxicity of things leaking through until that intestinal epithelial cell can be replaced. But if this is happening throughout, 100 square feet of that space, or 200 square feet, or 1,000 square feet of that space, it becomes overwhelming for the system.